This is Simon Shaheen. You are listening to WGXC Accra 90.7 FM.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, heard weekday mornings here at 8 o'clock on WGXC 90.7 FM. WGXC is hosting its pledge drive, and we need your support. Help keep hands-on creative community radio alive in your region by calling 518-697-7400. That's 518-697-7400. Or you can pledge online with your tax-deductible pledge at wgxc.org/donate. That's wgxc.org/donate. Help WGXC meet its goal and keep local, national, and international news broadcasting in Greene and Columbia counties. Thanks so much.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Bindlestiff Family Circus of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
90.7 FM.
Accra, Hudson, Catskill.
Take your Wellingtons off, children, and Mammy will tell you a pleasant story.
Good evening. This is Foraging Ahead, and I'm Kevin Factor. Tonight, conversation and music with Mick Lynch. Mick is a singer, a songwriter. You may know him from his earlier work in the band Guggenheim Grotto. He's a Irishman from Dublin and super gracious, super kind. So as Paddy's Day is upon us shortly, I thought we'd explore Ireland a little bit. I gave him a little bit of a quiz on all things Irish, and I explained Ireland to him and the mythologies that related to the particular area that I lived. Yes, I mansplained Ireland to an Irishman, because that's just the kind of guy I am. He was wonderful, and his voice is to die for. We got a couple of songs from him, and one song from his old band, and we're gonna head out with the Pogues. But right now, we start off a little conversation about the travelers, those itinerant people who wander the byways and highways of Ireland in their covered painted wagons, and they are known by a couple of other names that we will not repeat because it is not kind. Mick Lynch.
Well, I think being Irish has become very cool in the last probably 150 years. And it's probably from the Irish going over to America and longing for their homeland. And I think that Irish just had this romanticism about it because of that. But, you know, kind of everyone wants to be Irish in America. But, you know, that's not the same everywhere. Well, go over to Britain and, you know, say, would you like to be Irish? They'd tell you to fuck off. Like, you know, there's a definite romanticism about Ireland that has blossomed, you know. And it does help that we had good writers and good singers. And, you know, a lot of stuff did come out of there. But I think a lot of it is because, and I'm not dissing the Irish. I'm just saying that there is a lot of romanticism about it, you know, and that's doubled and dueled with our love of partying and drink, which is a stereotype, but also, you know, stereotypes, you know, they come from somewhere. So I think our idea of partying and the crack and, you know, wit and, you know, drinking, it's appealing.
It is appealing.
and you know, relatively safe.
Right? Relatively.
Relatively yeah. safe.
You haven't been out in Dublin then at 3 o'clock in the morning.
No. But I did have some interesting dealings with a band of travelers on my land.
Ah, yes.
Were very interesting. Very, very scary. Some of the scariest people I've ever dealt with. Just because you, like, they just had murder in their eyes. You know, like, it occurred to me at one point when I was having a conversation with them, because they had tarred my road, and they'd done a terrible job. Okay. And I'm like, it occurred to me that the best thing for me to do is just to pay these people what they asked and to have them go elsewhere. You know, that I used to have them hanging around. There's like all sorts of mayhem could happen. And I'm way out in the boondocks, or as the Irish say, the back of beyond.
Uh-huh.
And like, yeah.
They definitely have their own thing going. That's all I'll say.
They got their own thing going. Did you know that they are actually genetically identical to all the other Irish?
I would probably agree with that, yes. I can't imagine why they wouldn't be.
Yeah, they're just, at some point in history, this group just up and just started traveling.
Actually, can I stop you there, Kev? And the only reason I'm saying this, I have a couple of friends back home who are part traveler, and I don't want to come across as just, I don't know, I feel like I'm dismissing them a little bit. Yeah, I'd rather, I'm sorry to start off on that foot, but I'm just aware that it's a touchy subject back home. Speaking of starting with that, you got my Irish up.
Well, where does that phrase come from, to get your Irish up?
Well, I assume it would be the red rage of anger.
The red rage, you know, of anger.
Well, yeah, to get your Irish up would be to get your temper up.
In addition to the drink, the fighting, right?
Well, they were recognized. Well, it probably came from the traveler culture of the bare knuckle fighting. And a lot of the travelers would have come to the States and probably fought in Boston and the like. I think some of the first champions here were Irish guys. I can't remember his name.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't Jack
Sullivan.
No, Jack did it. Sullivan, that was his name.
Yeah, we got the big mustache and the...
Yeah, and they all would have been off the boat Irish and probably just used to, you know, the brawling.
Mm-hmm.
And sure, who was going to mess with them? And that's definitely, and obviously when they drank,
the tempers
went. Sometimes they probably just fought for fun, I think.
Well, there's that great
something to do.
There's that,
you know,
great scene in the Quiet Man, right, where there's this John Wayne is fighting whoever his nemesis is, and somebody asks him, is this a private fight or is it open to the public?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly. I've never seen The Quiet Man. I know The Quiet Man. I know scenes from it, but I've never seen it. All
well, that's The Quiet Man, I believe, is what introduced the phrase top of the morning to you, which I'm told is not used much.
Well, it's used derogatorily towards people who will say it and think they're Irish. And we're like, yeah, as if, like, we say that. The old top of the morning crowd, you know. That's what we'd say. Right.
So, you talked a little bit about the romanticism of the land.
It probably, the romanticism comes from probably literally people coming over because they had to, whether it be famine or back in the 1800s or even before. Promise of a better life. Like, Ireland was very economically depressed and, you know, it's a bit of a hellhole, to be honest. There was no food. The English were being oppressive. Mm-hmm. There was just no opportunities for native Irish people. Mm-hmm. And then they obviously went to the States. They went to Australia. And the romanticism came from there. It's the stories of the grandparents, you know, and the songs, and they probably mythologized it a bit. I don't know. The old sod had this romanticism, just a yearning to go back. And the people who came after who actually didn't live through it had, you know, the rose-tinted glasses. I, since living in the States, I've lived here full-time since 2010. So I've been
really?
Here 10 years.
Well, you've English is very good, I must say. Your English is very good.
I know, and to be honest with you, I hate when I catch myself with little Americanisms. Like, I'll sometimes say, I like the soft D on water. Like, I'll go water, you know, just little D. I know, they're dead giveaways. Oh, that guy lives in the States. And, like, you'd be slagged to hell back home. But
oh, yeah. Oh, they absolutely. Could tell.
And being over here for the 11 years, I've a newfound love of my country, like a love of my Irish heritage. Like, you had to go away to see it. Like, when I was in Ireland, I couldn't wait to get out. Like, not that I wanted to get out, but I was always looking to the States and always looking to tour and always, you know, just looking at horizons beyond where I was in Ireland.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's the case with most people. I mean, I never felt so American as when I lived in Ireland.
Yeah.
There was a, you know, and I think it's, I mean, not to, you know, not to play, you know, one-upsman on you. I think, especially where I was, it was a, you know, a very rural community, and the culture and the shorthand of communication, I quickly realized my family could be here for generations and we would never be accepted or
failed. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
There was just no way, you know. We'd always been the Yanks or the blow-ins.
Yeah.
But I mean, this country's accustomed to assimilating people. But even so, you do realize how your homeland and your country has imprinted itself on you when you're elsewhere. What is it that you miss most, or could you put your finger on it?
I'm the youngest of nine kids, so I do miss my family a lot. And my close friends, like Kev and the guy I was in the band with, and you know, other people too, but mostly my family. Just being able to pop around, you know, like, to be honest with you, it doesn't feel that bad these days. I can just hop on Skype, you know, or, you know, hop on Zoom and do the dreaded family quiz, you know, and see everybody. Mm-hmm. So it's not, I'm sure it's not half as bad as it when it was, you know, before communication was here.
Other than missing your family, what's the sort of biggest difference that you found between, I mean, you obviously have a community here, right? You have your music certainly connects you with like-minded people, but.
Well, I was lucky in a sense. And no disrespect to the rest of Ireland, but I did grow up in Dublin, which had a bit more of a metropolitan, you know, it was a bit more sociable. Mm-hmm. There was more options for me, is what I should say. Mm. Especially with the music, that was kind of the hub where all the songwriters were. Mm. We grew up, came up with the singer-songwriter nights, and we had, you know, that was our start point with the music. So there was definitely more opportunity in Dublin. And to say that it's better here, it's similar. Like, it's not like I'm from the back of beyond town, up, you know, behind a knoll up in Donegal, and I didn't see anyone, you know.
Right.
It really wasn't that for me.
Hmm. Well, I was struck by actually how many musicians and rather good musicians, you know, traditional and otherwise, that were in Ireland and actually could kind of make a living at it. Like, as a percentage of the population that can make a living playing music, I mean, even if it's just for tourists and whatnot, or bus.
Oh, music. Yeah, and that's what I did for a number of years.
Oh, yeah.
I actually never bussed. I did the bar gigs.
Mm-hmm.
Me and another fella, and we just, you know, sing. Actually, to be honest with you, we didn't sing many Irish songs. We mostly sang contemporary stuff and the Bowie and Beatles and all of that kind of stuff. There was a, you know, big market for that in Dublin. Mm-hmm. A lot of bars to choose from, and you just got your name out there, and we got a few regulars. You know, Thursday nights, Friday nights, Saturday nights, Sunday nights, and it's good money too. And you know, as a young lad in my 20s, you know, you get free drink and you get paid. Like, it was good fun.
Oh yeah,
And you really learn your chops learning songs.
Oh.
That was before I started really writing. Mm-hmm. So and when, a lot of my sorry, go on.
When did you start writing songs, or what moved you to start writing songs?
Meeting Kev, Kevin May. I was in a band called the Guggenheim Grotto,
mm-hmm.
And I met a guy called Kevin May back in 1998. Mm. I just met him in the bank. I met him through a friend of my girlfriend at the time, and we just hit it off. Mm-hmm. And I had literally just picked up a bass 2 weeks before, and we started playing, and we joined another two guys and had a band called Revere for a couple of years in Dublin. You know, we didn't do anything, but me and Kev just continued writing. Mostly me playing with Kev and arranging stuff behind him, like strings and, you know, helping him with on the music side, but he would have been the main writer. So I suppose I would have started writing mid-2000s properly.
Really?
And that's when I really started writing.
Hmm. And tell me you talk a little bit about your process. Is there one?
Yeah, mostly it's sitting with the guitar and just playing chords and messing around with blah blah melodies, literally singing na ta na ta da da, you know, or you'd have a line that you just keep repeating,
mm-hmm.
and suddenly a melody will catch you and you record it into your phone. Used to be a dictaphone.
Mm-hmm.
And then you forget about it, and then you come back and say, oh, what did I do the other night? And then something will come from that. And I usually have a structure of a song done in my head before any lyrics, which is weird.
Huh.
Because I'm a melody and chords guy, but I've really started, you know, getting into lyric writing since, like I said, the mid to late 2000s.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And especially since our band ceased touring and stopped doing anything in 2012, I really kicked into gear as regards lyrics.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
But as regards process, the music will dictate the lyrics to a certain degree.
Huh.
But I've never started with lyrics.
Never started with lyrics. It's always the music first.
Always, yeah. And if I listen to a new song of anyone else's, or someone goes, oh, listen to the song, I couldn't tell you what they're singing about. I'll always just listen to music. And I'd need to listen to it maybe three times to go, oh, okay, cool. You know.
Yeah. Well, I think, I think that's a lot of people as well. You know, there's a story about the, I don't know if you're familiar with the Drive-By Truckers or Jason Isbell. And there was like a moment where, all of a sudden people started listening to their lyrics who were like fans of theirs.
Yeah.
And they realized that they were politically diametrically opposed to the fans.
Yeah. That's gotta be a kicker.
What do you have for us, Mick Lynch?
A song about me growing up with TV and how addicted I was. It's funny. Like you look at the kids now and you go, oh, they're also addicted to Instagram and, you know, their phones, whatever. But we were no better. Like, I was constantly watching telly. Constantly. Yeah. So.
I saved a city from a lizard with a laser. Stop the world explode at 0.01. Broke out of Alcatraz with just a rusty razor. And led an army through the searing desert sun. I was Lawrence of Arabia. Just maybe a little lost in you. A bronze Adonis on a California shoreline, smooth as satin on a roof in Central Maine. I was the cute one in a band of desperados, and then an orphan who found love in the summer bay. I was Lawrence of Arabia. Just maybe a little lost in you. out of a window. What a wonder. Turn it over. Pull me under. But it's a campfire that leaves you colder, and it will burn you and never hold you. A memory that I hold dear was when a tree fell, knocked out the power in the neighborhood for days. Out came the candles as we searched for pens and paper. My folks, they watched us write and act out our own plays. I was Lawrence of Arabia, just maybe a little lost. I was Lawrence of Arabia, just maybe a little lost in you.
I like how your songs are non-linear. And they also...
I like that they're non-linear, too.
And they also, you know... they're also confounding in that way.
Well, there's all... I like there to be a bit of thinking.
Mm.
You know? Which, you know, doesn't lend itself to a pop hit, but, you know.
Yeah, you already had one of those.
I think I'm past that.
Oh, yeah. All right, so how about a little quiz to see how Irish you are?
Oh, okay.
All right. Okay. So, in Irish sort of mythology, there are many, many, many sort of peoples that from the legends. So, in order, can you put the fault?
Terrible mythology. Go on.
All right. So, can you put these four groups in order from earliest to most recent? Okay.
Okay.
We have the Celts. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We have the Fomorians.
I've never heard of the Fomorians.
And the Firbolg.
Jesus.
And the Tuatha De Danann.
Tuatha De Danann. Well, I'm going to go with the Celts.
Okay, the Celts are the most recent.
I thought they were the eldest. But thank you for getting me out of that one. I thought you were going reverse. I haven't a bog. I haven't a breeze.
All right.
I'd let's say Tudanen were his second most recent.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
And then take your pick of the last two.
the Firbolg and the Fomorian. The Fomorians and then the Firbolg, yeah.
Firbolg, what's that? Bolg, what's the English word for that?
I don't know.
No, but if you were asked that question before you wrote the question, would you have known it?
Yeah.
Would you? See, that's the thing. Sometimes when you're from Ireland, you don't. That's what I mean about mythologizing and romanticizing. You went to the bother of learning this stuff, whereas I lived there and I couldn't be arsed.
Well, what really kind of blew me away was the connection, with really the connection to the land. So it'd be like, we look over the river here and we see the Catskills, right? And we've got our, you know, our half-ass, Rip Van Winkle legend and all that. But we know it's BS. We know it was made up by Washington Irving.
But your legends are Native American, which
but we don't. But
it's inconvenient, don't, you know.
Well, yeah, no.
And I'm not blaming you for that. I'm just saying it is inconvenient.
No, it's my fault. I take full responsibility. I'm so sorry, but there's nothing I can really do about it now. But the mountains and the rivers and the valleys, they have those original names, as if, like, if we had the original Native American names for the landscape here and we were Native Americans, that would be the thing. Yeah, so yeah. You had, I lived not too far away from the Balakasheen, right? It's in Kerry. Okay. The Balakasheen.
I'm the worst Irish person.
Well, you're a Jackeen.
I'm a Jackeen.
You're a dub.
I'm a dub.
So. But the Balakasheen was the pass of Oisín.
As someone said in the pub once, oh, you're a basic bitch.
But the you know who Oisín is, of course.
I know
right.
The name.
Well, he's the demigod of music and poetry. Right.
Okay.
So, and he was the son of Finn McCool.
Uh-huh. Right. Good hurler.
And so one day the queen of the fairies hears Oisín playing on his lute and singing a song. And I think he also would write the tune first and then the words would come later. And he was famous for having nonlinear songs. But she fell in love with him. And she said, hey, why don't you come back to my place for a weekend? And he's like, all right, I'm down with that. So
I'm telling you, it's the one thing that got me laid back in the day. It was my nonlinear songs.
You with your lute and your nonlinear songs. Come with me to Tírnanog, right? And so he goes over to the land of the fairies. And he's hanging out, and he's having a good time. And he's like, look, you know, it's been a great weekend, but I got to get back. And they're like, oh, we didn't tell you? Yeah. The time goes different here. So.
Ryanair, no return flights.
Right. There's no return flights, right?
Yeah.
Like thousands and thousands of years have passed in Ireland.
Oh, yeah, the land of the
mountains. And he says, and he's like.
You might have won.
Exactly,
that.
Exactly. Oh, you know.
Could have swayed me decision.
So they all like, oh, yeah, oh, sorry, hey, my bad, you know. And he's like, tell you what, here's a horse, you know, or as they say, horse, right? Here's a horse. It's a fairy horse. You can go back and take a look, and you'll see, and there's nothing you really want to stick around for, and then you see, and then you can come back. But whatever you do, don't get off the horse, right?
Well, we all know what happens here.
So he goes back to Ireland from Tírnanog, and he goes through the Balak, the pass that bears his name, the Balakasheen. And he goes through, and he goes through the Balakasheen, and it was named after he did that, not before.
Oisín's Balak.
And, he sees these guys trying to move a big boulder or rock in a field, and he looks at them and he thinks, oh, these guys are so weak and puny back in my day, you know. So he goes over and rides over on his horse, and he sort of smacks the boulder out of the way with his one hand, but of course he falls off the horse and he hits the ground, and he grows
an age old
white
story.
His hair grows white and his beard grows long, and then there's this weird little addendum, and he goes, and just before he's going to die of old age, St. Patrick comes running up and says, hey, here's Jesus Christ, blah, 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 blah. He's like, oh, I'm in. Boom, baptizes him, and then he dies.
Wow.
But the Balakasheen.
Hang on, St. Patrick was many, many years later, surely. Oh, this was 1,000 years later. Of course.
Yeah, 1,000 years later. And, okay. I think it's sort of the genius of both the Irish and the Catholic Church is that you could make both fit into anything if you really want, right? So, you know, to keep the old gods, St. Patrick was busy, you know, making them all Christian so they could still remember them. So I was just sort of mansplaining Ireland to you.
It's the first time that's happened. I've never been mansplained.
Oh, you probably haven't. You just haven't been paying attention. Because you're a guy. All right, so.
whatever.
So, but that's what was. The features of the landscape were just. They bore the names of the myths Yeah, it's a very, very different feeling when I was there. Okay, so next question. In a survey from 2018, the average Irish person used their shillelagh once a week, twice a week, every single day. Who said the Irish can go to hell or cannot?
Ooh, it was Cromwell, was it?
Yeah, you got that one right.
You got... That's because it actually happened. Not like using your shillelagh once every hour or whatever.
Okay, name a food that the Irish will not boil.
Ooh.
That's a trick question. Don't boil
everything. Everything, yeah.
All right, sorry. Okay.
Sausages. They don't boil. Well, my mum boils sausages. Oh, God. She does. She boils them and then fries them.
All right. Which of these four words or these four phrases describe what natural phenomena? Pishing, lashing, desperate, soft.
Rain. Precipitation. Yep, okay. The dreaded Irish rain.
Yes. Yeah. What is the term? He mows his own grass. Is that praise or an insult?
I'd say an insult.
Ah, very good.
Yeah, essentially, if you do anything yourself, it generally means you're very stingy with the money. Like, you'd peel an orange in your pocket, kind of, you know. Cause
is that one? You'd peel an orange
you didn't
in your pocket?
The orange.
Oh, that's great.
He mows his own lawn. It could be derogatory, and, you know, that's almost like an old, that's what he said, you know.
I heard it used in exactly the way that you initially thought, that he's just out for himself, or as the Irish would say, he's my fan.
The thing is,
right?
You could say anything in Ireland and just give an L wink at the end of it, and it could mean anything, you know. Hey, did Johnny ever get married? Oh, no, I think he mows his own lawn. You know?
No, but that's true. But as an American, to me, it's like, oh, yeah, of course. I mow my lawn and you mow your lawn. Everybody mows their own lawn and the place looks great. You know, because it's every man for himself.
It's very direct. There's a lot more direct.
Yeah. But another one, my favorite one is, he's so mean he'd skin a mouse for a halfpenny.
Wow. Why would the mouse have a halfpenny? Did the mouse eat the halfpenny? Or is someone paying him to skin a mouse?
Either way, it's quite
the story. One, he was watching a mouse eat a halfpenny, therefore he knows there's a halfpenny in there. Or someone said, "Will you skin that mouse? I'll give you a halfpenny."
Yeah, I think that's what it is. It sounds best with a Kerry accent, like, you know, "You show me each skin a mouse for a halfpenny." And what is the definition of a boreen?
A boreen is essentially a small. Cars will go on it, but it's not made for cars. It's just an absolute shit show of a road. It usually has the grass in the middle.
And how about a shebeen?
A shebeen, is that like a hole in the wall pub? Yeah, shebeen. Mm-hmm. Usually won't run by an old woman. Who'll serve you a pint through a wall or something. I don't know. Go on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And crack.
Fun.
I don't know. I feel like that's one of those words that doesn't really translate.
Crack, I think, would be a combination of just a fun night out with lots of slagging and, you know, taking the piss out of someone and each other.
Nicknames. Irish nicknames.
Okay. Am I to give you some?
No, yeah. What do you got?
Generally, nicknames in Dublin is all I kind of know in Mayo. Generally, you put E-R at the end of everything. Or I-E or E-Y. So I was Lynchy. Yeah.
Oh, is that
or,
it? Yeah.
Or anyone McCormick or something, you go, oh, that's Macker. You know, it's kind of, that'd be the kind of general one. You get more of the convoluted nicknames like the Badger Jim or something. You get that down the country more because, you know, he once, I don't know, petted a badger and got bitten. You know, just some nonsense story that'll stick to you forever.
Oh, yeah. Or inherit from your, yeah. Your father and mother.
He's Badger, yeah. He's little Badger Jr.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't even know why I said Badger. I don't know where that came from.
No, that's perfect. No. Well, because I know where I was.
Breaking Bad, that's it.
Was that?
He was one of the guys in Breaking Bad, yeah.
Oh, right, Badger. The, because they were, you know, the Irish custom of naming the firstborn son after the father, you know, gives you a phone book where, like, half the phone book is John Foley.
Yeah.
And you can't, you can't disaggregate the Foleys unless each group of Foleys has a nickname.
Yeah.
So where I was, there were the Rock Foleys, there were the Scissor Foleys, there were the Bonnie Foleys, there were the Kings, who were also Foleys, and then there were the Bride of Foleys.
Wow.
Yeah. And they're all named John. So Johnny, Johnny the Rock his family come from up on the Rock. There was this mountain, there was a big rock there, and that's where they were from. So they were the Rocks.
Wow.
Or the Rocky. And the Bonnie Foleys, all the men went prematurely white. So by the time they were 27, 28, all
the
hair was white.
Foleys, wow.
Yeah, the Bonnies. And then the Bride of Foleys were from the Bride of Valley. And then the King Foleys, he actually married into that nickname because this John Foley married this woman who the other women thought was putting on airs. So they nicknamed her the Queen, right? So then when he married the Queen, well, of course, he became the King. And so the whole family's called
the King. It's amazing. And you know what's even more amazing is you could put that name on a letter and it would get to them.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
The mailman must have a list or just know them. They'd have to get a local mailman.
No, we had Pat the Postman. No joke. No joke. The guy's name was Pat.
For those listening, Postman Pat was a famous cartoon or famous animation growing up.
Yeah. We had Postman Pat and but the Scissor Foleys were the best.
Scissor Foleys.
Well, because, and this was like three generations that this family had this nickname. So I think it was Dan Foley's grandfather was shearing sheep, and he was a very good sheep shearer. And back then they had those scissors, and the landlord was watching Dan shear the sheep, and the landlord says, "Those are mighty scissors you have, Dan." And Dan sort of looks at him and throws the scissors into the bushes and says, "Are they mighty now?"
Yeah.
And that was such the quip. That was such the comeback that the entire family for three generations was known as the scissors.
How was that a comeback, though? Like, it's nonsense.
No, it's not. It's freaking brilliant.
Are they mighty now? And he just throws them away. Did he find them after?
No.
He just lost a good set of scissors there.
He praised the tool.
Oh, gotcha.
And not the man.
Oh, gotcha.
Right?
Gotcha.
He did not give the man his due for his skill.
Gotcha. I didn't get that.
Yeah. Oh, they were subtle. They couldn't read, but they were subtle.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Wow.
Years and years. But, oh, sorry.
My point being, my point remains, to make a point,
yeah.
You got rid of a good set of scissors, And yeah, it was a bit of an odd choice.
That was Wisdom by my guest tonight, Mick Lynch, half of the duo called Guggenheim Grotto. Mick has been kind and generous and has been sharing his thoughts and listening to my BS all evening. And last up, we're going to have a few more reminiscences, and Mick is going to give us a song that he fell in love with when he came to America. Mick Lynch.
Still to this day, stuff comes up and I'm like, that was the weirdest thing that, you know, like.
Well, like for instance, sorry to cut across. My sister-in-law's father, my brother has told me stories about him, how he had a running feud with a guy in Dingle.
Mm-hmm.
So much so that I think he was the bin man. He was essentially the garbage pickup guy.
Mm-hmm.
And for years, just every so often, her father would put a cavity block at the bottom of the wheelie bin inside. And he wouldn't know when it's going to happen, but his machine would be destroyed.
Oh, God.
And, like, that's just dark.
Oh,
just literally because, like, he slighted him for something or a perceived slight, you know? Like, that's taking the scissors into the bush, like, another step. Like, it's crazy.
No, no, that's, and that's what just, you have a lot of time on your hands, you know?
Well, like, the thought of it, like, where am I going to get a cavity block? Like, have you got a group of cavity blocks in your garage, or do you have to go to the hardware store, buy a cavity block?
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of planning involved.
Yeah, yeah, and it's just to, I mean... Just, you got nothing better to do. Like, there's nothing.
Obviously not. Or,
yeah.
It could have been something. Like, I wish I knew the story of why he does that. Probably, like, back when he was 16, he kissed a girl he liked or something. It just.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Easy.
Yeah.
No, we had a water scheme. We had a water scheme. One of the most. Just profoundly sad and sweet evenings of my life was there was a water scheme in Glen Carr, and we were having trouble because we get the water from this sort of lake up at the top of one of the mountains, and it was getting spotty, and who was it? It was Billy the Rock, one of the old guys, you know, with the, we always wear the hat and the jacket and the, you know, regardless of,
yeah,
you know, and he didn't understand. People were talking about sort of turning it over to the county to run because it was too difficult to operate. And it was just that simple gravity fed thing. And he said, I don't understand what the problem is. It's just like, we built this thing in 1973, the government gave us sacks of cement, and we went up the mountain and we built this thing, and we've had water ever since. We've never had to pay for water, and now we're going to pay for water. Why can't we just, like, get some sacks of cement and go up there and fix this thing? But everybody was busy, right? Everybody had jobs. Everybody was working. They weren't just sort of farmers scraping by and whatnot. You know, uh-huh. they didn't have the time, right? They had satellite dishes, and the kids were going to school and all this stuff. But the issue was that one of the PVC pipes was cut. Somebody had cut the PVC pipe. And it turns out that one of the farmers whose land it goes through, and there was a right-of-way on it, was tormented as a child by some of the locals when they went to school and just never forgave them. And was sabotaging the water for the entire valley. Wow. Because of some incident that happened when he was like 5 years old or 6 years old.
Wow, that's like a lot. Like, that goes deep.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. So yeah, it was. So Mick, got any other songs for us? Just to keep me from talking
well,
more.
Would you like an Irish song, or would you like me own
what
song?
What makes a good Irish song, Mick?
Generally, it involves a place. It involves an old love who they've either lost or left.
Ah.
And probably lost since they left.
Mm.
And that's it's different kinds of songs. Like, there's the rebel songs then. Anything that mentions the British, you know, it'd be very much a nationalistic kind of vibe. Mm-hmm. But kind of the ones that people love... would be a mix of the two, I'd say. Like The Fields of Athenry, who is a story of persecution, you
love
know,
and
love
loss.
And loss, and yeah. The Brits. So, yeah, it's a number of things, really. The song that I was actually going to do is actually one of my favorite Irish songs. It's actually not anything to do with loss of love or the Brits, but it has to do with loss of life.
Ooh.
Yes, and one's own. And it is Fiddler's Green.
Ooh, I love that song.
Yeah, and it's a song that I was only introduced to recently, well, within the last 10 years, since I started doing shows over here in pubs.
Oh.
And I learned it.
Oh.
And I just loved it. I like that need to bring your alcoholism into the afterlife.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
which, you know, It is. I don't know. I think it's a very simple song and very. Just.
There's a sweetness to it.
There's a sweetness and a hope and an acknowledgement that it's all nonsense.
Yeah.
You know.
Even
what he's singing about is all nonsense. It's just to make him feel better. Fiddler's Green. As I walked by the dockside one evening so fair, to view the salt water and take the sea air, I heard an elf fisherman singing a song. Won't you take me away, boys? Me time is not long. Wrap me up in me oilskins and jumper. No more on the docks I'll be seen. Just tell me, oh shipmates, I'm taking a trip, mates, and I'll see you someday in Fiddler's Green. Now Fiddler's Green is a place I heard tell, where fishermen go if they don't go to hell. Where the skies are all clear and the dolphins do play, and the cold coast of Greenland is far, far away. Wrap me up in me oilskins and jumper. No more on the docks I'll be seen. Just tell me, oh shipmates, I'm taking a trip, mates, and I'll see you someday in Fiddler's Green. When you get to the docks and the long trip is through, there's pubs and there's clubs and there's lassies there too. For the girls are all pretty and the beer it is free, and there's bottles of rum growing from every tree. Wrap me up in me oilskins and jumper. No more on the docks I'll be seen. Just tell me, oh shipmates, I'm taking the trip, mates, and I'll see you someday in Fiddler's Green. Now I don't want a harp or a halo, not me. Just give me a breeze and a good rolling sea. I'll play me old squeeze box as we sail along, with the wind in the rigging to sing us a song. Wrap me up in me oilskins and jumper. No more on the docks I'll see. Just tell me, oh shipmates, I'm taking a trip, mates, and I'll see you someday in Fiddler's Green.
I was born.
Cave away, haul away.
In South Australia, around Cape Horn.
We're back with South Australia.
Yeah.
Holloway, you're rolling, King. Cave away, haul away.
Just there, I met this Nancy Blair.
We're back with South Australia.
Holloway,
you're rolling, King. Cave away.
On February 26th, WGXC turned 10 years old. It was February 26th, 2011, that WGXC first went on the air. And on February 26th in 2021, WGXC held its annual award show as volunteer programmers voted on their favorite volunteer programmers. Here are the winners. For Best Local Album from 2020, Amy Rigby and Reckless Eric won for the single Vote the Bleeper Out. You can guess what that was about. The WGXC Morning Show or Best WGXC Afternoon category, the Drive Time Edition Wednesday of the WGXC Afternoon Show was the winner. For Best Music Programmer, Cheryl Kay of the Jazz Disturbance got the nod. For Favorite Show or Segment You Never Want to Miss, the Drive Time Edition of the WGXC Afternoon Show, Wednesdays from 4 to 6 p.m., was the winner. For Programmer You Most Want to Hang Out With, there was a tie between WGXC newscaster Phil Grant and Crossroads in Rhythm host Alan Skerritt. For Favorite Past Show or Programmer on WGXC that is no longer a host on 90.7 FM, The Shomer Show from Karen Shomer was the winner. For Most Unpredictable Host on WGXC, the winner was Dan Seward from the Battlefield Earth Show, 10 p.m. every Tuesday night. WGXC Best Interviewer, the winner was Cheryl Kay from the Jazz Disturbance. For Second Favorite Local Radio Station, after WGXC, Second Favorite Local Radio Station of WGXC programmers was Radio Kingston, and the favorite local DJ on another local radio station went to Peter Aaron for his Go Go Kitty show on Radio Kingston and simulcast on WGXC.